to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rogue Startups. Today we have Dave Hensel on the show. Dave, how you doing?
Doing awesome, man. Thank you for having me on.
No, my pleasure, my pleasure. So we were introduced through kind of a mutual friend, and Dave's kind of Superman backstory is he is the founder of Max CDN, which was then sold to StackPath, which is kind of a pretty big provider in the CDN space these days. And so we're just going to talk through a lot of kind of, you know, what you're up to now and dig in a little bit of the story of kind of scaling past initial traction. I think that's really kind of what piqued my curiosity with chatting with Dave is, you know, so you get your first, whatever, 100 or 1,000 customers and you're making 10, 20 grand a month. How do you go from there to, you know, seven figures? Not easily, but what does the path look like there? Because that's, you know, question kind of like where we are now with Castos is we definitely have product market fit and we have traction. And then how does the mindset shift from getting there and kind of clawing your way to systems and processes and mindset and stuff like that to really scale? So you founded Max CDN. How long ago was that? Not to make you show your age.
In 09.
Okay, gotcha. So you found it in 09. And when did you sell to StackPath?
We sold in February of 2016.
Okay, gotcha. So 7-ish years, 6 or 7 years. Eight years, yeah.
8 years, yeah.
Yeah. And what kind of, if you can give an idea of like the kind of revenue you guys were doing when you sold?
We're unfortunately under do not tell.
Okay, loss. Okay. How many people on your team?
We had like 100 people on the team.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you guys were funded?
No, we were bootstrapped.
Okay, so you're bootstrapped with 100 people.
Yeah, so it's just a funny story since we're all bootstrappers. I always bootstrapped all of my businesses. We never took on investment. Actually, we took on an investment with Max CDN that we never touched. I was just like an employee of ours, a friend. His father had a fund, and we just took an undisclosed amount so we can say we have funding because in the beginning, with big trust issues because we positioned ourselves as a enterprise CDN, and you know the enterprise game is they. If you have Red Crossing the Chasm, you know, it's not easy to reach these people in the enterprise market.
Yeah.
So we kind of used this as a, you know, trust thingy, but we never used the money. It always stayed in the bank account.
So, well, there's a couple things there I want to talk about. So, okay. So we'll touch on the funding bit first. So you took funding and you know, just there's a popular kind of thing in the bootstrapping space these days of kind of like micro funding where someone, you know, these funds invest in folks like myself, potentially to invest, you know, $150,000 just to get you kind of off the ground, if you will. Mm-hmm. And they take a percentage of the company, you know, pretty small percentage, like 10% or something like that. Looking back at your bootstrapping experience, is something like that valuable versus truly bootstrapping something with all of your own money and kind of resources?
So we never really had to manage expectations of real investors, you know, it was like kind of, you know, like a side deal that was not really that significant. So I have no experience in terms of managing somebody who's actually, you know, kind of having a boss, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we managed to pull off Max CDN completely bootstrapped. Actually, it's pretty funny. A friend of ours had an upstream provider called Enzima. And he basically had racks all over the world in data centers and just had you know, like this much of the rack filled, you know, like a few units for peering equipment. And he was, the rest was air, you know. And so we had this unique opportunity that we talked to him and he's like, okay, guys, you get the space and the power and everything for free. You just have to pay for the bandwidth. And even at his cost, or just like small margin, but the idea was that we use a lot of bandwidth and he can buy bigger chunks and get a better deal.
Okay. Okay.
You know, this was kind of like the thing that made it easier to bootstrap a CDM because it's a very capital intense business.
Yeah.
I had an e-commerce business before, which I sold, and my business partner, Chris, he sold a hosting company. So we had some funds to get the business started. So it was like, you know, I don't know if this is really bootstrap because we had some funds of our own.
Yeah. You know, so without kind of disclosing the gory details, so say you're looking to start Max CDN again today, how much money would you anticipate needing to put in of your own, you know, from the profits of your business or consulting on the side or something like that to get to a place where it's supporting you and your business partner?
Oh, this was, in terms of supporting us, I think the first 3-4 years I was burning cash. Living in Los Angeles, you know, it's expensive.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, this would not have been feasible with not having some money from previous businesses.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys are working on it full time with kind of burning your savings as your runway? Yeah, it's interesting. And so it's just you and your one business partner, Chris, for MaxCDN?
No, we had, it was two business partners. It was Chris and Ben, and then I joined, and then they just sold a hosting company, and they want to get into a similar business. They couldn't do hosting again because it was in their clause, you know, non-compete. They couldn't do it, and CDN was a loophole, and Chris kind of thought that's a cool idea. And I initially wanted to do something completely different in the States, but I chatted with him, and, you know, this kind of made sense. I used to be a Linux system and network engineer almost in a past life. And
okay.
I switched to the dark side of business and marketing. You have, you know, somewhat of the tech chops, and you understand the marketing piece. Don't you want to do, you know, run marketing and product? And this was a pretty good fit. And we had some problems with one of the partners, and we had to buy him out, and was pretty messy, pretty chaotic. Not to get into the really gory details, but yeah, we managed to buy him out. And always get a good, you know, you hear this so often, you know, as advice, like when you start something with somebody, always get a good lawyer, have a good operating agreement, like spend the money up front. It's like really the best investment you can make, because you spend so much time and money and effort on this thing, you know.
So that if there's a problem, the steps are clear that, you know, if someone wants to leave, the buyout structure is like this, and they can leave under these terms and all this kind of stuff.
Also just like have a solid operating agreement and know what's in there and know what you can do and can't do, and just like kind of be aware.
Gotcha.
Something actually, this could be from your initial question, like how to gain the traction. You know, I have some funny story for that. So we started out as NetDNA, which was an enterprise focused CDN, and, you know, we want to sell to, like, okay, we're like Akamai or Edgecast back then. We just like offered a little cheaper, a little less features, like the light version, and everybody will come and buy it, which did not happen. You know, it was like really hard to gain traction in the beginning.
For the enterprise to provide a light offering is kind of the opposite of what you want to do, right?
Yeah. And you know, especially in the CDN space, there's a lot of trust involved, because, you know, if the CDN's down, your business is down, basically. So we had a really hard time getting this off the ground. And I think this also was partly because our vision for the company was just like, okay, we want to do this to make some money. There was like no real deeper why behind it. And then we struggled a bit, and then we kind of sat down and thought like, hey, how can we really provide value to the market? Where can we, you know, do something that really has an impact? And back then, CDN was only an enterprise game, and there were no real, like, easy to use, just type in your credit card and roll CDN. So it was always like long sales cycle, you know, get pushed into a 1-year or 2-year contract, pay $500 a month, and all the startups and blogs, it was like a CDN was just not an option.
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, let's launch this other brand, since we have all these servers anyway sitting there, and make it pay as you go, $10 for the first terabyte, which was mind boggling how cheap it was. You know, it was like usually pay like $300 back then. And then we really started scaling. This was like the thing that, and so
from like, this is totally selfish. This is the question of like, once you get those, you guys found this space, right? So you found like self-service CDN for small to medium businesses, whatever. You go up into enterprise, sure. But once you find this and you got your first, whatever, however many customers, you're doing decent number of revenue. What is like the path and the mindset shift look like for you guys to go from like, oh, we got something, to let's take the time and effort and resources into growing this into a multi-million-dollar business, you know?
I think we kind of start out with this mindset, this will turn into a multi-million-dollar business. I think it's also really important to kind of, you know, begin with the end in mind. You know, so we kind of had the original thought was to bring it up to $1 million in revenue a month and then sell it. This was the original plan. And funny enough, it was that once we kind of hit that point, everything kind of started falling apart to some degree. Like kind of the wheels were coming off the bus because somehow, you know, all the network, all the people, everything you kind of architect, even if it's subconsciously to hit that goal.
Okay.
So kind of be very, very conscious on, you know, did you read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, begin with the end in mind is something super, super powerful to really think through, like, you know, what do you want to get out of this? How big you want to build this? Because you're going to build very different processes and you find very different people, you know, to...
Yeah.
To build that
thing. If your goal is only here and you get there and you realize, shit, that's not the good goal. We want to get to way up here, right? Like that's, then you've done all this work to set up the wrong kind of measure of success.
Yeah. And, you know, then you have to kind of rework all the processes and, was a fun, sometimes stressful, but very, very cool journey. Throughout this process, we kind of figured out all these things, like kind of why you need a vision statement, why do you need core values, and like all these things that are perfectly laid out in the book Traction. Have you read Traction?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's two Traction books that are pretty popular these days. There's the Gino Wickman and the... Yes. Okay.
It's Gino Wickman, yeah. Yeah. Gino Wickman, How to Get a Grip on Your Business.
Yeah,
the EOS, fantastic the Entrepreneurial book. Operating yeah. System, and this, like all these things that we went through painfully, kind of figuring it out somehow ourselves, was like perfectly laid out in this book, which I read like 3 years ago. I was like,
right. Yeah, yeah.
So everybody out there, do yourself a favor, read the book, implement EOS. It's, yeah, it really works wonders.
No, it's a great book and it's pretty thick. I mean, it's thick in like the high level mental kind of mindset stuff, but also like from a practical standpoint of like there's a bunch to implement in your business as you go through the book. So yeah, it's not something like you read in a weekend and then your life is transformed, like, you know, the 4-hour work week or something like that. Like it's more like a
workbook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So for you guys as the founders, you know, the things that you're doing or are kind of worried about when you're in those early stages, the first 2 years or something like that, to where you get to in the sixth or seventh year, what kind of stuff changed for you or for the folks who are more managing like more of the technical side of things or whatever? How does like the perspective and mindset shift change as you guys grow?
One big thing was that after, I think, 25 people or so, communication became a real issue, like internal communication, you know, kind of to make sure that everybody is on the same page. Before, mm-hmm. you kind of knew everything was going on in the business, but at some point you just don't know anymore.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, to make sure that this is handled was quite a challenge. You know, we had build processes, for example, like a weekly internal newsletter on, you know, where somebody interviewed all the department heads kind of collecting this information, or for new releases, when I did a product release, that we had like a checklist that I had to go to each department head and tell them, okay, we're going to launch this thing. Do you need anything? Is this cool? Are you aware of it? You know, we made them sign this, because before I was always just like, you know, just push it out there and see what happens. And, you know, you kind of, when you're small, you can kind of juggle this all yourself, but otherwise just like throw wrenches into, you know, other people's processes. You know, so this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, in the beginning, you're kind of like a fast speedboat, and then you just boat gets much bigger. And at some point you're a tanker, and it like it really becomes hard to make any changes. I don't know where this is from, but I really like the concept of that you have different people for different stages of the startup. So in the beginning, you have like the guerrilla fighters. You just like throw them out of an airplane, say like, hey, please conquer this hill there. And this is all you have to tell them. And they don't need any guidelines or whatever. They kind of figure it out as they go, shoot some people along the way. And, you know, it's cool. It's just like get it done. But once you have kind of secured this patch of land, then you have to kind of bring in the army. And, you know, then it's still a war time. So it's still a little chaotic. But you have to kind of, you know, when you shoot somebody, you have to tell the person above you what happened. And it's like more structure. And then once the war is won and, you know, you're kind of at like 50, 60, 70 people, then you have to switch to the military, the police state, basically, where, you know, you can't think outside of the box and you have to always follow protocol and blah, blah. And it kind of gets like, you know, and you have to see like, what kind of person are you and what kind of people are you hiring? In the beginning, we hired somebody that has built a CDN for Yahoo. He would have been, from a technical perspective, he would have been amazing, like the perfect fit. But from a culture perspective, he was like, this was way too chaotic for him. He just like couldn't operate
mm-hmm.
in a chaos, you know. So it's really important to see where you fit. I'm also more of the guerrilla military style person, so I can start stuff very easily, but once it gets too policey, I really get bored, and then, you know, yeah. I'm also like my style of acting fast and just kind of figuring it out as I go messes with the police style processes, you know.
So at that first point, questions later.
I kind of moved into I was running our labs the last year, because I was like, you know, I was much more efficient by churning out new prototypes or new cool ideas or new cool projects that we can test out in our small team without disturbing the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then if it's viable, then we kind of roll it into the core, you know. So it's really important when you hire in your startup, you know, kind of get the guys that are the guerrilla fighters, and, you know, you have to kind of, it was really eye-opening for me to see this throughout this journey.
So this is definitely true. I mean, we've seen this with Castos, with our hosting platform for podcasts, that we've hired a few different people in the support role over the last couple of years. And we've had some people that are definitely the police style. They're just, you know, where's the documentation for this? And I'll go answer the question, and it has to be documented and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, we're four people right now. And so like that there's not answers to half the stuff that comes in. And so those people just, they come in and they throw their hands up after like a week, and they're like, Craig, this is a shit show. Like this is not possible. And so a big part of our recruiting and interviewing now is, this is a very early stage startup. We don't have answers to a lot of the questions that you're going to have, and you have to not just be okay with that, but like thrive in that environment. Like you have to be a problem solving on your feet, you know, thinking on your feet as you go, making it up. And kind of like what we say is like, you are shaping the future of what this department is going to look like in the business. And so you have to be really cool with all that stuff. And if you're not, then this is just
not the right place for you. Yeah.
Yeah. You can be the network engineer from Yahoo. You can like the best possible person for this role, but it's not the right person at the right time for the role. Totally. Yeah. We got that right now, I think, but we won't make that hiring mistake again, but it totally burned us a few times with some great people too.
We had this, we have our, in our Maxian core values, the first core value was build cool shit. And we did this on purpose because we want to, first of all, attract people with an engineering mindset who like to build cool shit. But we also want to keep away the people who want to wear a tie to work, or they would be offended of, you know, kind of having the word shit in your core values of a company. You know,
yeah.
So kind of like serving this purpose. So I think the core values or work and whistle was another of our core values, to make sure that people like, hey, we really work hard here and we enjoy it. It's not like a 9-to-5 thing where you just, you know, kind of chill. You know, it's like you push, you grow, you learn, and you have a lot of opportunity to grow and to grow with the company, and kind of to, you know, kind of build, run your own department, which is kind of like lots of opportunity, but also a lot of work, you know, not easy going thing. And yeah, this is our, I'm a big believer that your mission, vision, and values should be a decision filter in everything you're doing, also in your private life and also in your business life. So I think it's, I created a course called Managing Happiness, which is applying business principles to family life. And my wife and I found that this just works much better when you married to an entrepreneur. And so for decision-making in my private life, like these core values, and like when I want to work with a company or mentor somebody or invest or whatever, I always make sure that is this in line with what I want to do, with who I want to be and who I am. And then it's much easier to say no, not that much formal.
You know? Mm-hmm. So in both your personal life and in your business life, at what point do you finalize and kind of put on paper, these are our mission, vision, and goals and strategy, or whatever kind of those, that the kind of set of documents you want to put together? When do you put those together, and what's the process you follow for sticking to them and using those as the compass for where you're going and the decisions you're making?
You read Traction, right? Just like kind of do a level 10 meeting with team on a regular basis, and kind of have a link to the VTO and use it in like all make decisions when you make a decision, or you always use the core values and the mission and the vision as a decision framework, and you communicate this to people. So when someone has an idea to build a feature that's not in line with your vision, then you don't tell them like, hey, that's a stupid feature. You tell them like, hey, according, what does this have to do with our vision? You know, does this really fit in there? So kind of always use this. Then we score people by their, based on our core values. We kind of broke down the core values that we have into certain, you know, tied this to certain actions or KPIs.
Okay.
And so we grade them doing that. We have a Slack channel where we do shout outs. If somebody's really living up to certain core values, hey, XYZ did an amazing job with this customer, living up to a core value, you know, customer success. And, you know, so we kind of have, it's like on a regular basis, kind of used everywhere. And in the private life, we also have this, this level 10 style meeting where we do that in all the bigger decisions when we plan out on what we want to do, kind of 90-day plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's also like kind of run it against the mission, vision, values.
Yeah. Is that tough? I mean, we were talking a little bit before we started recording. You're in Turkey, we're in France, expat lives, you know, pretty alternative compared to what most people are living. Is it tough to say, like, I'm going to create a 90-day plan for my personal life with the kind of lives we live? Or is that more necessary in situations like ours?
I think it's always good to have a plan. Like, you don't necessarily have to, or an agenda. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to be super stiff in terms of sticking to it, especially in your private life. But that, you know, it makes sense to kind of have a plan and have goals. You know,
okay.
My health side, I want to get back down to 93 kilograms a day. You know, so 93 kilograms. I'm currently at 96 or so, and so I'm. We're doing a challenge right now with the business, 100 push-ups every day, go to the gym 3 times a week, and don't eat after 9 p.m. And so I just like have my little to-do book here. And
okay.
At the bottom, like I have these check boxes, and every day I say, like, okay, did I do it? Did I not do it? It makes it much easier if you have like these, built these habits. You know, I think our habits determine everything in our life. If we're healthy or unhealthy, happy or unhappy, broke or balling rich, you know, like these are really, really breaks down to the habits that we have, and kind of having a plan and having, you know, kind of really thinking through what I really want out of life. It makes it so much easier when you have like a direction that, you know, like an aimless leaf in the wind that kind of.
Yeah, right. Well, you also don't know if you're there or not. If you've achieved your goals, if you don't have goals, you don't know when.
Yes,
you're.
Yeah.
Have you read Atomic Habits, the James Clear book?
Yes, really good one. Yeah.
It's definitely on my list. We're going to the US in a couple of weeks, and so I have this, like, my Kindle is loading up with books for the trip. I'm actually going to reread Traction, I think, because it's time to really implement some more of that stuff. And so, like, I'll be reading it, and I'll have my notebook on the side with, like, okay, I have to do this, and we need to put in place this. And because it's not like you don't read the book, you have to read the book, and then
you have to do stuff. Yeah,
do stuff.
If you need some help with this, I've implemented in probably 10 or 15 businesses now.
Okay,
so.
Give you a shout for sure.
One quick thing in terms of hiring and books, you just talked about books. I like to ask people that I hire, what is the last book that they've read? And what are the 3 books that had the biggest impact in their lives? You know, and if somebody's kind of stumbling on that, then it's a clear indicator that they're not really in a growth mindset. And then, you know, it's not somebody that I really want on the team.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like another way of finding out if, you know, if somebody's in line with, you know, because startup, you can't be static. You have to always, you know, grow with the startup. Otherwise, you know, especially as a founder, you have constantly do self personal development. Otherwise, you'll get crushed by the machine that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah. I want to get into what you're working on now, but I have one other question about kind of this growth phase of the business. What is the kind of decision-making process or matrix you go through being a tech-heavy kind of company for developing or investing in product or investing in like marketing and sales? Like how do you kind of decide, I'm sure you guys had a process in the end at least to say like, okay, revenue is here and customer, you know, our SaaS metrics look like this. We need to invest more in the technical side to, you know, get more ARPU or higher retention or something like that, or just more customers.
So what we did is we always wrote down in the management meeting, we everybody listed the rocks or the big things they would like to work on that will have an improvement on the team or on the business in general. And then we put them all on a sheet. And then we rated them by revenue, customer happiness, employee happiness, and I forgot, I think there was one other point. And then we kind of scored them by what is the one that, you know, has the biggest impact. And then we kind of looked at the list and collectively decided, okay, we're going to work on these first. And this was where our company priorities. So everybody had to know what are the company priorities and be focused on rocking them out. Yeah, this was our decision-making process, kind of collectively figuring out, you know, what is the best for the company right now.
Gotcha. And so using like the vision, mission, and goals as the ruler against which you kind of judge all of these decisions, it's probably important to review these on a pretty regular basis. And I know the Traction book talks about how often you review those, but was that like a pretty important process for you guys to say like, this is like the truth in our business? We need to make sure that the truth is accurate as the business grows, right? Is that an evolving thing?
For us, when we started out, the first few years, I always thought that, you know, core values and mission, vision values is like this, it's
bullshit,
stupid stuff that people put into business plans and maybe somewhere on the website and then never look at it again. You know, thought it's like another waste of time. And once we, you know, first we had like no clear mission with NetDNA, and then we started MaxDN. We had a very clear mission and vision on what we want to do. We want to make CDN as accessible as possible and as easy to use as possible to, you know, so everybody can use CDN, which worked like a charm. We grew really fast, but we messed up by not telling the new hires what we're about. You know, we just like onboarded more and more people, new head of sales, new head of engineering. The new head of engineering came from Splunk, data analytics platform, and he wanted to build this, or he did build this crazy analytics platform sitting on top of CDN, which was amazing for 5% of our customers. You know, the rest was like...
Oh, I've done that.
The new head of sales went like, okay, hard for enterprise again, even though this was not really our thing. Yeah. And then we ended up running into 10 different directions and nothing moved anymore. Then we realized like, oh, damn, we messed up and we have to kind of figure out what do we want to do here? What is our mission, vision, values, and kind of use this as a decision filter. And since then, I became like super obsessed with mission, vision, values as the filter and, you know, the North Star for the business.
Gotcha.
Two cool examples. Jack Ma, he said in some talk, he said every day he has like a ton of ideas, and every day smart people from his organization come to him and say, hey, we could add this feature and this would make us X dollars. He says, always cool. Let me run this through my filter. Vision statement is, I think, make doing business easier anywhere. Is this in line with this? Yes, I consider it. No, go away. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, a lot of FOMO goes away. Another friend of mine started to Ring. You know, Ring.com, the doorbell thing, sold to Amazon.
No.
Yeah, it's like a billion-dollar exit to Amazon. And I talked to the guy who's running his Ukraine office with hundreds of engineers in there. And one of the engineers said, hey, we have. They also have these floodlights that you put on the side of the house. When somebody walks past, the lights go on, and you can real time talk with them and see them. It's like, hey, what are you doing on my lawn? And the engineer said, like, since we have this microphone in there and we have the lights, so we could program a mode that these things flash to the music, right? And versus telling the guy like, hey, that's a stupid idea, he just asked him, what does this have to do with making neighborhoods safer, which is our mission, right? And then discussion's over, you know. So I think it's such a powerful thing to make sure that you really stay on the right course,
yeah.
You know, for what you want to build.
You mentioned a course that you created, you know, around kind of these ideas. Is that kind of what you're working on now, or what's life look like after your exit?
So first, I thought that I'm gonna do this full time. Like, it's called managinghappiness.com. The course, you know, applying business principles to family life. Yeah, I produced the course. It's great. But then while promoting it, I also started a podcast, and I mainly talked about. My intention was to talk about work-life balance and work-life integration with other entrepreneurs, but I mainly talked about business with them. You know, then after episode 20, I realized like I'm not a family therapist; I'm a business guy, so I have to go back into business. And I wrote Conscious Capitalism. Have you read the book?
No, sorry.
But John Mackey, the Whole Foods founder, and the idea is that, you know, like a business is the best vehicle to have a positive impact in the world. If you're not doing it for increasing taking good care of all stakeholders, meaning employees, customers, suppliers, community, the planet, etc. And he proves that these businesses are actually more successful than the ones that only want to increase shareholders' value. And so After reading this book, it really encouraged me to get back into business. So I started ltvplus.com, which just provides live chat agents, because this was like a headache that we had at MaxCDN to kind of find good, reliable live chat agents to cover 24/7. And we built an office in Serbia, which worked really great. Amazing guys there. And so I thought, okay, I want to provide the same thing for other founders, because it was such a pain for us. And we figured out how to do it really well. And then my old business partner, Samir, who left MaxCDN 2 years before we sold, he started TaskDrive, providing sales development and lead research for B2B businesses mainly. He wanted to get rid of the business. He wanted to sell it. And I bought it from him because it was like also a talent as a service business, you know, so kind of in line with what I was doing. And yeah, this is the main focus right now.
So interesting that you went from a really tech heavy business to kind of two people different businesses and people, in the people world, what's that like, I don't know, kind of mentally and emotionally?
I'm a people person. I love people. So for me, it's cool. I it doesn't drain me to deal with personalities or people issues, you know, so that's, and I wanted to do something on the people side after being so tech heavy, for such a long time. And, you know, kind of also our goal is to get to, sounds ludicrous, but to 10,000 employees.
Wow. You know, cause
I think it's a cool thing to provide people a good job where they learn a lot and they get paid well and they, you know, can provide for the families, et cetera. So this is something that, you know, kind of motivates me. It's cool to see, like, when you have 10,000 people working for you, you provide for so many families. And so
I mean, one of the most satisfying things for me across the different businesses is the lifestyle that we provide for our team members. I mean, we have people that are doing exactly what they want, wherever they want, pretty much whenever they want. And I've experienced a benefit from it, but I can give that to them as well. Is super, super cool and really fulfilling to just be able to say, hey, you know, we employ these people and they get to live their best life because of it. Yep. It's super cool.
Also allowing people to work remote is also a big thing that I'm a huge proponent of. Prefer before, I didn't really dig it that much. I like to have my team close to me. But it's, you know, we actually wanted to open up an office in the Philippines when I went there a few months ago. And everybody said, like, please let us work from home. We don't want to commute. And it's a 3.5 hour commute per day for somebody on average in the Philippines. And it's not like, you know, you sit in your comfy car and listen to a podcast. It's like you most likely drive in these jeepneys or whatever they're called, these like little buses.
Yeah.
They're loud and unpleasant. And if you do the math on, you know, let's say, you know, 3.5 hours per day, 5 times per week, 50 weeks in a year, you end up at 109 work days, 8 hour work days that you're just like spent commuting, you know, so kind of,
yeah.
And, it's just mind boggling. And so to allow people to work from home and kind of, you know, be with the kids, we hired a lot of people who are, have been very far in their career, but then want to had children and want to stay at home. And, you know, giving these people an opportunity who are really, really amazing, talented people to just like work when and where they want, you know, so it's something I really dig.
We found a lot of success in hiring the, kind of stay at home mom or stay at home dad, crowd. Yep. They are professionals that have kind of semi-retired to raise kids, but you know, the kids are in school from 9 to 3 or whatever. And they have 6 hours where they're just sitting, twiddling their thumbs. And they're typically like really successful, motivated people, but they can't get a typical job because they only have 6 hours in a day. But for those 6 hours, man, they are a fantastic resource, and a demographic that I think everyone should look at. Yeah.
Yep.
How many people do you have currently across the live chat business and the Task Drive business?
We're currently at 100. So we have
between the two.
Yeah, okay. We have some way to grow to the 10,000, but you know we're pushing, we're growing very fast.
Gotcha.
And I just bought the business in April, and we were 30 people back then.
Wow.
April, May. Yeah, so it's going.
Wow. Okay. So Is it just processes to let you grow, you know, triple almost, or, you know, 2.5 times in a year from 30 to 70 people or to 30 to 100 people?
Processes is a big thing. You know, so we have to interview a boatload of people. You know, we have like everything like processed down from people getting kind of automated testing, like if they're qualified, and, you know, only these people get to the Calendly link to schedule a call. And then we have like, we use Google Classroom, which one of the guys that we had, the manager in the Philippines for the HR part, he uses Google Classroom, which is amazing. It's like a tool where you can, you know, have like a e-learning thing with tests at the end, you know.
Okay.
So it's really cool how you set it up to, you know, hire people fast and educate them so they're up to speed so they can start.
Interesting. I want to go back to the podcast, because obviously being a podcaster, I love to hear about your show. What's the name of the podcast?
The Managing Happiness Show.
Managing Happiness. Okay, cool. And how many episodes are you guys into?
We did 20 episodes or so.
Okay.
And then I stopped like a year.
Oh, so you stopped it. Okay. So when you pivoted from it being kind of about happiness to realizing you needed to be in business, you...
Yep.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Did you find it to be like the podcast medium to be like something you wanted to get back into, or are you kind of done with it for now?
I've been thinking about it. No, I like podcasts.
It's yeah, cool. You're here, so it's...
yeah.
neat. So at 100 people now between the two kind of service businesses, what is getting to did you say 1,000 or 10,000 people?
10,000.
What does that look like? What does it take to get from 100 to 10,000 people? Like in your mind, you just like, okay, the next 5 years, we're going to go on this road. What does the road look like?
The road looks like to form a lot of strategic partnerships. It's like the thing where I think you can, you know, kind of, I was always a big fan of creating win-win-win situations. You know, at MaxCDN, we integrated with W3 Total Cache, which is a WordPress caching plugin, you know, and just like made it very easy for users of this plugin to activate MaxCDN.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the users were winning because they had a very easy way to make their site even faster. We're winning because we're getting customers, and the guy, Frederick, who made the plugin, you know, is getting affiliate money from us. So I really like this model to build out these strategic partnerships.
Cool.
To work well.
Cool.
And also in terms of like getting more exposure, being maybe starting a podcast again, or starting a podcast, being on lots of more podcasts, and, you know, just marketing. Yeah.
Gotcha. And it's LTV Plus. Is that the name of the live chat service? Who is like your ideal customer for LTV Plus?
Ideal customers are e-commerce companies, because it's much easier to get the agent up to speed with an e-commerce business versus like a SaaS business, you know, having like, you know, training somebody for, you know, to support MaxCDN is a whole different ballgame than somebody on e-commerce. Somebody who does international business, multilingual is also something that's cool, because then we can just provide more value. And 50,000 to 100,000 visitors a month to make sure it's, you know, there's enough chat volume going on. And really people who take a whole pot, not just like one guy for US hours, but somebody who wants 24/7 coverage.
Okay.
Because these guys, you know, it's like the bigger customers.
Pretty successful e-commerce shops.
Because they just grow faster, you know, versus like a smaller guy that's probably going to stay at one rep for a very long time, versus somebody who already, you know, takes five from the start, will more likely grow to 15.
Okay. Neat. So we had live chat on our site on Castos for about a year. We used Intercom, and we moved to Help Scout, which has live chat, but we don't use it very often. And interestingly, it might just be the crowd we see or something. After we got kind of fully migrated, we haven't seen any real change in like customer retention or trial conversion ratio or anything like that, which is nice because it's removed a lot of pressure from me and from the and for Eileen that we have on support to not be in front of the computer all the time. Is that something you see typically, or like, I'm sure you guys have a lot of data, like is having someone in live chat all the time better for the business? Like, do you guys have data around that?
You definitely need enough traffic to make it worth the time. But I think these days with Drift is something that works really, really well. If you have like the bot component in there where you can, depends on what your call to action is. Like for us, the call to action is to schedule calls, you know, and if you can, if you, if your business is, if you want self-serve or you want
self-serve.
Yeah, I think it will become even more important to have this because people are so used to instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to it's like, hey, oh, what this? And if not, they lose interest and maybe go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So in general, you probably have higher conversion rates if you can serve the customer right. You know, like if you somebody, you know, asks something and you get back to them 6 hours later, then if they go, you know, when my podcast's down, probably they get back to me 6 hours later as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like a thing too. If you don't do it right, then I think you can take potentially also harm yourself.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it, in my mind, I know that it's the right thing to do, really. But it does create a ton of stress. And so I kind of look at it as like, if we can get away with not doing it and the business is still successful, then I want to do that for as long as we can.
Yeah.
It, you know, if we're getting away with it, if you will, you know, and the business is growing and people are happy, then I think it's good. So we can focus our resources other places to set the business up for like longer term success. And then, you know, use LTV Plus or whatever to have someone there all the time. Even if they can't answer all the questions, just say, yep, yeah, I see you. These are the three steps we should go through. If that doesn't solve your problem, we'll get it to the engineer. At least the customer knows that we're there. Yeah.
Something works really well. It's like if you say like, oh, just like send an email to support at, then people get pissed. But if you say like, oh, let me escalate this to blah, 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 and let me take all the information from you, and then, you know, somebody will reach out to you. Different experience versus like just, right. Oh, no, that's not us. Talk support.
Right. But on the back end, it's the same thing pretty much.
Yeah.
Neat. So totally switching gears, we talked a little bit before we were recording that, so you're living in Turkey and have just moved into an office, and this is a total tangent, but this is the stage of my life that I'm in right now too. From kind of working in an office at home to working in a dedicated office outside the home, what's your kind of thought process and journey been like there?
So I never worked from home before okay. I moved to Turkey. Always went to the office. I mean, of course, like on Sundays or in the evenings, but like not really working full-time at home. It's okay. It's absolutely not okay when my daughter's at home because she, you know, always comes in daddy, you know, wants something. So it's, and I kind of lose my trail of thought, which is not easy. Or my wife has like random requests that she thinks are very important now. And I'm actually not doing anything right now. I'm just sitting there type of thing. Right. So, So I'm a big fan of offices. It's like the, you know, you can do push-ups at home, but when you go to the gym, you're more focused and you get more in. So I think it's also the mindset shift, like being in office, okay, I'm here to work hard versus like, oh yeah, let's dabble around a little bit. So yeah. I personally really enjoy having an office. I think it's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you find you work the same number of hours in an office, or do you work, I would hope, less? If you're going to an office, get really good, intense work done, do you work less or more than at home?
No, I still work at home in the evenings. I love what I do. So it's, you know, it's like the, I don't watch TV, you know, I'm just, it's, in the German language, we use the word job, but only for something, you work at a pizza joint while going through college or something like this. But your real career or vocation is called Beruf, which comes from the word Berufung, which means calling. So it kind of like you do the stuff you're meant to do, right? And then, you know, it's like it's not really works like the stuff you enjoy doing. You know, like my mother was a doctor, and also for what she, unfortunately, she passed away a few years ago from cancer. But she planned on, once she's retired, to work with homeless people or something like this. Just like keep on doing
calling.
Something, you know?
Yeah,
calling. Yeah.
Mm, very cool. Very cool. I think that's a great place to leave it. Not with your mother's, but with the calling, because that's like, no, it's really important. Because I mean, I think it is like a lifestyle that we're getting into with all this, right? I mean, it's huge risk and sacrifice, and you could be going and doing something else as a, you know, a W-2 employee for any big company, I'm sure, but you're doing this, and it's weird and different and scary sometimes. And so realizing and embracing that it's your calling and is like just your life is your work is an important thing to be cool with in the long term. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really important to kind of really figure out what do you want out of life? it's also something that's in the course. I had this epiphany moment when my wife went through breast cancer 5 years ago or so. And when this happened, I envisioned me on my deathbed looking back at my life, thinking, did I really do what I was supposed to do? Did I kind of live the life that I wanted to live or should have lived? And a lot of things became very crystal clear to me on what, you know, what I really want. And I think it's a very healthy thing to do, to figure out what you really want and, you know, why you do this, why you want to get up in the morning. And, you know, it also makes it much easier to do the stuff that comes along with a job that's maybe not that pleasant, but kind of still do it enthusiastically.
No, makes sense. Dave, for folks who want to kind of learn more about you and reach out and get in touch, where's the best place to reach out?
You can always reach me at david@taskdraft.com. You can also hit me up on Facebook. It's my Facebook Messenger is probably my preferred method of communication.
Cool.
You know, having so many people all over the globe, it's the best way to chat. Yeah.
Neat. And managinghappiness.com is the course.
Yep. Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Awesome. So we'll link to all those in the show notes for this episode. Dave, thanks so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. It was a wonderful chat, and hope to stay in touch and do this again soon.
Same here. Thank you for having me, and visit us in Turkey.
Yes, absolutely. We'd love to.
Since you're around the corner.
That's right. Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.